Real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
On a more serious note, by the way, I want to speak to Gloria Masters, my special guest tonight. She's here to share her harrowing story. Gloria was a child sex trafficked for the first 16 years of her life. And leased by her father, trained by her grandmother, she had no one willing and able to help her. Now an esteemed author, speaker, founder, she is the woman behind the Global Hand Signal for under 16s. This is to help children to combat abuse and trafficking. And she joins me now on the line from New Zealand. Gloria, good evening to you. How are you?
Hello, great to meet you.
You too. I said good evening and I don't even know what time it is in New Zealand, so it's probably not evening time at all. It's probably morning or something.
Yeah, it's 12:30 p.m.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we're not too far off. Anyway, yeah. So Gloria, let's take us back in time a little bit because, you know, I, like everybody else, want to hear your story and where this all started, because it was extremely brave of you now to come forward and share your story to help others. And that's what this is all about, I suppose, because so many people are in this situation or are coerced into these kind of situations. And we've had people before talk to us about these situations and it's kind of like a hidden secret. So if you could take us back, you know, to your story, you know, when you were first trafficked or realised you were being trafficked.
Yes. And look, thank you for that. We know the numbers are huge and in your country as well as mine. So mm-hmm. there's many of us out there as survivors of this. And unfortunately, it still goes on today. But look, the reason that I do what I do is because I've managed to do the healing I needed to and been able to make sense of it as much as I could and now can give back. So that's why I do what I do.
Yeah.
But in answer to your question, it all began for me from a very young age. And I believe that within my family, this was generational child sexual abuse and trafficking, simply because my grandmother was so willing and able to train me. I was 5 when she began training me. And,
When you say she was training you, I suppose this is kind of like investing you, brainwashing you, indoctrinating you into a way of life.
I think there is an aspect of that, but I'm talking about training me in the art of seduction and how to please men sexually and how to perform for men. So we're talking about she wanted me to be the best child sex worker I could be.
Wow.
So we're talking about that level of criminality and degradation, really.
That's hard to even fathom and imagine when you say that at 5 years of age, that your grandmother would be teaching you how to satisfy men. That's just even hard to fathom. Yeah.
Exactly. But you see, even worse than that was that she got paid money to do it. So every time men would arrive at her house, I was often trafficked from her home. They would pay her, and when my father came later to collect me, he would count out the money and give her a percentage of it, I imagine.
Wow.
But I saw money changing hands. So I knew she was being paid to train me and to teach me. And all I knew as a small child was that this was just a nightmare, really. I didn't understand any of it. And what the audience probably need to know is it didn't begin with child sex trafficking. My father had been sexualizing me from birth, really, and I'd been abused by him and had his extended family and friends from the age of about 4 involved as well. So this was throughout my whole family. And I think for me, the betrayal for me was that I'd always felt my grandmother was someone's home I could be at, where I felt I was fed, I was able to eat food, and I felt reasonably safe there, whereas at home or other places I was taken to, I didn't. So when this betrayal occurred and she started training me, her whole persona changed and she became a very different and angry and therefore quite frightening to me as her grandchild. Yes, that was one of the worst experiences for me, was having her train me when I thought I could trust her as a child.
And what can you remember? I'm sure you remember all of this like it was yesterday to some degree, but can you remember at what point or what age you were when you realised how wrong this whole situation was? Because at five, I imagine you just do what you're told, or you think you don't have the morality to understand things too well. So what age were you when you kind of realised there's something very wrong with this whole situation?
Well, it's a very good question. The question you ask, when you're abused or trafficked the way I was, and your audience will relate, because you know no different, because you're a child when it begins, and I was a teenager, I was 16 years old before it stopped, my conditioning had been that this is what you did. So
it was normalised. Yeah, it was normalised.
Normalised within the family. And so for me, it was just what I had to do. I hated it. Instinctively, I was terrified of my father. I, as a young child, as an 11-year-old left with him, I had tried to take my life 3 times because I was so desperate and miserable, you see. I just couldn't escape it.
And did you tell anybody? Because I'm assuming you went to school and stuff like that and you had some friends.
Well, yeah.
Did you ever tell anybody, or did you ever say it to a school teacher or somebody else outside of your family?
No. Well, I did tell a friend one day. We were on a train coming back from school, and I did tell her that over the weekend I would be drinking and performing for some men. So I did tell her that, and then promptly forgot that I had told her that, and it was years later she reminded me that I had.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you see, back in those days, children were to be seen and not heard.
Yeah, I remember that line,
the adults were in charge. Whatever adult you were with, you were told to do what they say and you better behave. So that conditioning stuck. And at school, I was out of control because it was my only safe place. No one was hunting me down or trying to hurt me or trying to rape me. So I was safe at school. But you see, I'd also been threatened that if I ever told anyone, I would be killed. Or my mother would be, I would never see my mother again. So as a child and teenager, you believe what you hear because the person who he was a very scary man, my father, and I was terrified of him. So, yes, I believed those threats.
And at what point can you remember the day that you said, I need this to stop, I want this to stop, and you made a stand, or what did you do to make it all stop?
Yes, so at the day I turned 16, my parents had been separated for several years, and the day I turned 16, I was allowed to choose for myself who I live with and whether or not I had to see the other parent. And so I decided no. Now, that sounds easy, but it was one of the hardest things I've ever done because my mother was such a narcissist. She was, this could only ever have happened because there was no interest or love in her heart for me.
Did she know what was happening? Did your mother know what was happening to you?
I'm pretty sure she knew. Yeah. She left him with the other children when I was 11, and I got left in the house with him and my brother, who became one of my main abusers from the age of 11.
Oh, God.
But my mother was not interested in me. In fact, the only thing I ever remember about my mother was that I always felt I was in the way. I was just a nuisance to
her. You were an inconvenience to her, yeah.
Yes, yes. God. Very sad. Yeah.
It's actually a tragedy listening to this story. It sounds like something that's so unbelievable. I know it happened to you, of course, but it sounds like something that's so unbelievable. It's such a tragedy.
I know.
And by the way, you know, I've heard of these kind of things happening before here in Ireland too. We've had many over the years, I suppose. I'm sure you've heard about all the child abuse that happened in this country. And still to this day, by the way, it's still happening. People are being trafficked in this country. But so when you were 16, you decided to do something about it and you wanted this to stop.
Well, I had no power, just keep in mind, because I've been conditioned and trained and bullied into being sex trafficked and abused consistently. When I turned 16, I don't know how I found the strength and the courage, but I said no, I wasn't going to go and see him again. And so I never had to, but that wasn't the end of the story, because after that, although it was the happiest day of my life, I was so traumatized. I had 16 years of horror that was ingrained in my very being.
It was damaging.
I was so damaged. But the reality is, during those first 16 years, it wasn't just being trafficked. I was also made to perform in, I would say, well over 100 child sexual abuse materials in terms of videos and still images, which were traded and shared across our country. So back in those days, it was the old projector reel, the big film.
Yeah, the 70 millimetres,
That's the one. And so I was made to perform in those, which meant there would be men on a stage and I would have to go around and pleasure them and perform for them. I would also have to be taken up to a nightclub in our red light district in Auckland, and I was taken up to a back room and leased out of there to people, but I wasn't allowed to be visible in the main part of the nightclub.
So in other words, it was child prostitution, essentially. Yeah.
Yes. But I was young when that happened.
Yeah.
So I wasn't 16 when that happened. That was most of it was when I was 11, that part. My grandmother would perform forced abortions on me because no one wanted a pregnant sex worker as a child. And look, there was just so much horror that went on.
I don't know how you're still here listening to that story.
I don't know either.
You know, that was just horrific. And how you can...
Yes.
And I feel kind of half bad asking you to bring it all back again, but I know that part of the, Handing the Shame Back Foundation is talking about it. And I know you encourage people to talk about it. But it is very, very difficult for you. So the rest of your life then, once you managed to get away from this, how did that affect then the rest of your life? In your latter teen years, you know, up to kind of in your 20s or whatever else.
It was terrible because I was free, but I didn't know what I was dealing with. I was still a child at 16, if you can appreciate that.
Of course,
And so I was out of control. I did stupid things. I had an eating disorder. I slept with way too many people. I drank too much alcohol. I was not in a good place, and I didn't understand any of it. So I got married in my 20s and had my first child at 27. And it wasn't until my daughter was born that the memories really started to force their way in.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to then deal with an avalanche of horror. And to be honest, I would not be here today had I not been a mother. That's how bad it was for me trying to deal with all of that.
I mean, you've written three books on angels' wings, yep. Fly Path to Healing, and Keeping Kids Safe. I mean, it is so important that we keep children safe. It really is, because unfortunately nowadays there are so many risks out there for children. And your recent book, by the way, Keeping Kids Safe, is a roadmap for parents and teachers on how to protect children from grooming and sexual abuse, because it's all around us, unfortunately. But for you, what advice would you give to people who've been in your situation? And by the way, I don't believe there are that many people in such a tragic situation that you've been in, but certainly people have been groomed or have been sexually abused at a young age by their parents. By the way, I never asked you, what happened? What became of your father and your grandmother? Did they ever get charged or convicted, or what became of them?
Oh, yes. Look, I did take a case. The New Zealand police did their best, but I was a lone voice. None of family or people involved would ever admit to anything. So although I was credible and believable and consistent in my story,
nobody would corroborate it. Yeah, nobody was corroborating the story.
No, and of course, so it wasn't that I wasn't believed. I think it was more that I couldn't provide the burden of proof wasn't met. And that's what happened. But, you know, the interesting thing is I can hold my head up high because I know the truth. And, you know, I guess the reason for me writing that third book, Keeping Kids Safe, is I want to educate people on what to look for and how to teach children to keep themselves safe, because there isn't anything out there doing that. And we need to provide our next generation with the tools, which is partly why I instigated the hand signal for under 16. So you'll know it. It's the universal sign for help. It's if you hold your hand straight up, thumb across, closed fist, it's a universal sign for help.
I've seen that there. And my producer is actually doing it at the window here to show me, so she's very familiar with it as well.
Yeah. Now, if ever you see a child or young person do that, they're saying, I'm not safe, I'm being abused or trafficked, please help me. And we know that it's being used across the world because I'm being sent images, I'm being people
so
reaching
you,
out.
By the way, so you're the one behind that particular hand signal?
I'm the one that has repurposed it in 2023 for children under 16.
What a great idea, by the way.
Oh, look, let's give kids tools, because there's a misnomer out there that children will freely speak of this. No, they won't.
Mm-hmm. And that's why paedophiles would take advantage of children, because they think children will keep a secret. They think children will say nothing or will be afraid to say something.
They're too scared.
And do you think talking about it, because some people are afraid, and look, it's everybody's choice. If you want to talk about it, talk about it. If you don't want to talk about it, that's good too. But do you think talking about it has helped you, and writing about it, do you think that's helped you to heal?
Look, I definitely do, and I'm a bit unusual in that I've been able to heal enough to give back and to do some teaching and writing about it, she said humbly. But my heart is with survivors, and I would say this. If you're a survivor listening and you don't feel ready to speak out, please don't. That's just more traumatizing. But there are ways of releasing that, and one could be journaling, one could be talking to a close friend, one could be, just kind of talking to a therapist or going and joining a group. There are survivor groups everywhere. If you're not ready, don't do anything, because your mind isn't ready.
Yeah.
But if you are ready, you know how you'll know, because you feel like you have to start speaking this out. And it's important that we trust our inner nudgings and our instinct, because that is where the truth lies. And you know this to be true: what is for you will find you.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot more detail about your story, by the way, in your first book on Angel Wings, and that kind of details your childhood if people want to read more about that particular story.
Of course.
Yeah, and then you do talk about your healing as well in the second book, Fly Path to Healing. And the foundation that you've set up, you also, by the way, I know you have a podcast on YouTube too of the same name, Handing the Shame Back Foundation. What made you start that up? That's a kind of charity dedicated to helping others.
Yeah, because this is what I call globally the silent epidemic. Mm. No one wants to talk about it. Governments tend to turn away because it's so rampant. It's such a big issue, and it's very hard to deal with. Most people turn away from it because the thought of child sexual abuse is so abhorrent. So all it does is allow a green light for the predators to keep hunting down children, and that's what they'll do. But I think what made me, or what led me to it, was that I could see the deafening silence. And I thought, I know there's a lot of us out there. I want to create a safe space so that other survivors feel whatever you need to say, you're safe here. And I'm proud to say the podcast is now in over 90 countries across the world. And, you know, there's a lot of people listening.
And for people who want to hear the podcast, by the way, it's the same name. Is it Handing the Shame Back?
Handing the Shame Back. It's on YouTube, and our website is handingtheshameback.org. We're a charity. I just give of my time because I never want another child to go through what I've gone through. And we've got to stand up, and we've got to have our voices heard, because children can't protect themselves. That's on us.
I mean, I'm sure you're well aware that Ireland has its own dark secret and its own horrible past, where we have had so many people in this country who were victims of clerical abuse, not just parental abuse, and that happened too, but also clerical abuse by the clergy in this country many, many years ago. Thankfully, that doesn't seem to happen now. Well, hopefully it doesn't happen as much. But we still do have a problem. Within the foster care system, we have a problem. Yeah. You know, within TUSLA, which is an organisation which is meant to be protecting children. We hear constant stories of children going missing. You know, where they go, we don't know. So those problems still exist in society.
Oh, they do. And I just want to say this, that over 90% of abusers are known to the family or the child. So we've got to stop thinking that it's a stranger. It's used over 90% well-known to the family or child, and the grooming that takes place is mainly of the parents, believe it or not, because the parents are the gateway to the children.
Yeah.
And groomers and predators know this. Well, look, so we've got a very big problem globally, but I just want to say there is hope. We need to educate people. And that's partly why that Keeping Kids Safe is out there. And the hand sign, please, if you do nothing else, share the hand sign.
Absolutely. And people can look up the hand sign online, by the way, if you want to have a look. It'll be on your website
just
as well.
Just go to our website,
Well, look, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It kind of hasn't. It's been harrowing talking to you. And so sad to listen to about your childhood. I'm so sorry you went through that in your childhood. I can only wish you well in the future. And to anybody else, by the way, who's been through this, if you go to the website or read any of the books on Angel Wings, Flight Path to Healing, or Keeping Kids Safe, they're all available, I'm assuming, on Amazon, if people want to go
they're and get them. And all versions, so audio, e-book and paperback. But they're on Amazon. They're also on GloriaMasters.com.
And you can go to YouTube or your favourite podcast channels. And if you go to Shame Back Foundation, or should I say Handing Back the Shame, or Handing the Shame
Handing
Back.
Handing the Shame Back.
Handing the Shame Back. Sorry, I got it the right
way.
You
got it.
Gloria, thank you very much indeed for sharing your story. And I wish you well in the future. You're a beautiful person. And thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. There you go. What a shocking, shocking, harrowing story. And you know what? That's going on. It is still going on. For some kids, that's how their lives are turned out. Imagine at the age of 5, her own grandmother grooming her for child prostitution. It's incredible. You can't imagine something like that happening. And our father renting her out to other men. Wow.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.